time again to belly up to the mic and welcome you to the Driving You Crazy podcast. It's mid-June, summer's in full swing, it's been really hot. And I'm your host for the day, Denver 7 traffic anchor, Jason Looper.
I'm co-producer and pedestrian advocate, Joseph Peters. By the way, I just saw on the news this morning that a man found 30 scorpions outside of his apartment in Phoenix, and now he would like to move out.
Well, he found them outside.
Well,
better than inside.
I think it was like, no, there was at least one inside because his wife was stung while he was while they were sleeping. And so he went on a quest with a pair of Proceps to try to find all of the scorpions in and around the house. And he claims he came out with 30. And there is a picture of a box full of scorpions. So I believe him.
When I would visit my wife's grandparents in El Paso, we would see scorpions down there, and so because they had this little house, I would sleep in this cot in the middle of the living room, and the one warning they always say, if you have to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, be aware of the scorpions. Make sure you look down first. Okay. Well, first of all, I'm not going to be sleeping, and if I am going to go pee, it's probably going to go outside then.
Correct, because at least is there grass in El Paso? No, I'm good, man.
Yeah, no,
I'll set with scorpions.
By the way, I love the hat.
Thank you. It's a Denver 7 hat. They are not available for sale. So
why not?
I don't know.
Are they available for me?
I don't
Probably
even know the
not.
Answer to that.
Why would I need a hat? I don't need a hat.
You don't need a hat. When are you going to wear the hat? Certainly not on the air, I'll tell you that.
Okay. Maybe we should go back to the old 7 pins.
There you go.
I actually have two of those 7 pins. And
I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on this. We did go back to the 7 pins.
What? When?
Yeah, they handed them all out during the meetings.
I missed the memo that I'm supposed to be wearing that. Huh. Well, we here at the Driving You Crazy podcast want to be the first to congratulate a local woman for receiving a distinguished honor. The International Parking Institute, the good old IPI, has recognized Molly Winter. She's the executive director of the Community Vitality for the City of Boulder as their Parking Professional of the Year.
Very well done.
Wow.
Shout out.
My goodness.
Good work, Molly.
Molly received the honor at the 2017 Conference and Expo in New Orleans. You think she celebrated New Orleans style?
Wait, it was national?
International.
Wow.
Molly. This is an international award here. The press release says Molly has guided parking at the City of Boulder for more than 25 years. The IPI describes her as, quote, a proactive champion for the parking industry who is taking mobility to new levels. She has worked to increase capacity and use of existing parking through innovative pricing, technology, and public-private partnerships, unquote. They continue to say, under Winter's management, Boulder's public parking system has evolved into a nationally recognized district-based multimodal access system serving cars, transit, bicycles, and pedestrians. That was an awesome sentence full of words that no average person would ever use in that order.
As a retired English major, I would not call that an awesome sentence. Too many adjectives.
Winter currently oversees the city's Department of Community Vitality, which includes access and parking, commercial districts for downtown Boulder, University Hills, and Boulder Junction. Melissa Yates, she's the access and parking manager for Boulder. She says a major recent accomplishment for downtown was the installation of modern gate equipment in all 5 of our public parking garages. This is just one example of how Molly continues to keep the city aligned with industry best practices and ensure we are ready for the future of parking. Put up some gates and win an award! Yeah!
You know, whatever it takes, man.
That's it! Just when I think I'm not qualified to do anything except deliver pizzas, I learned there are people who get paid to win big awards for innovative ideas like having modern gate equipment installed in a public parking garage. Yeah!
Yeah. It is easy to park in Boulder.
It is now, thanks to Molly. If it was not without Molly's help, parking in Boulder would be a disaster. People would just leave their cars in the middle of the road. You would come and go in the parking garage there, and you wouldn't have one of those modern gates to keep people in or out.
You know, at Denver Health, they use a rope sometimes at their parking garage.
The rope would not win Molly an award.
I think we're about 20 years away from having nothing but roped-out parking garages winning you that award, right?
Being a city's parking manager, that's a position I think I could be very good. I could excel at that kind of position. That or assistant to the assistant manager of parking for a city. Hashtag career goals. Hashtag Mike Damone. Did you ever see Fast Times at Ridgemont?
No, I did not.
Be the assistant to the assistant manager at the movie theater? Okay. No?
No.
Crickets. That's where I insert the crickets.
Our audience probably watched Fast Times at Ridgemont.
If they were my age.
Yes.
All right. If you're curious, like me, about the International Parking Institute, by the way, they describe themselves as the world's largest and leading association of professionals in parking. Members include everyone from garage owners and operators to architects to city managers to government agencies, healthcare centers, universities, airports, and convention centers. IPI works to advance the parking profession through professional development, research and data collection, advocacy and outreach, and with experts from around the world in dozens of specialities to make sure parking and transportation functions efficiently so people, businesses, and communities can keep moving. Oh, that's a long sentence. That was all one sentence.
You write these scripts.
No, that was in the thing. I got that from them. I wonder how they're preparing for self-driving cars. I mean, parking's going to change for the better, right? I mean, you would think that these people would be in on this whole self-parking deal because think of it this way. When you come up to one of those fancy gates that Molly, you know, instituted there at Boulder, a self-driving car doesn't have one thing that it might need to go get the ticket.
Oh.
An arm and fingers to push the button and grab the ticket and then put it right there on the visor above your head. Does it?
Does this mean... I mean, there's one of two things, right? You could have a laser that scans each VIN of these self-driving cars so they know what's coming in and they can verify that it's supposed to be there. Or the return of the parking attendant. Bring back our jobs.
Is that what it's going to be? Self-driving cars could bring back the toll collectors on the toll highways and the parking attendants?
Well, I mean, the toll you can't have a self-driving car and not have an easy pass, right?
Oh, okay. I guess. All right. But they still don't have arms.
We need to invest in some self-driving car parking garages.
I think that would be brilliant.
That is brilliant. Think about all the warehouse space Amazon has, and you know they're going to be using it for something like that in the future.
Well, and now they own Whole Foods. They're going to be, you know, delivering that latest, greatest GMO whatever.
Am I allowed to go off on a tangent here, too?
Sure.
Everybody I'm talking to and I'm hearing from says Kroger needs to be really concerned here. What does Kroger have to be worried about? Kroger has 1,500, 2,000 stores. They're going to be just fine. I don't understand why the stock price tanked. I don't understand why people think Amazon's going to have a leg up in this market. And if I was somebody who was good at picking the old stock market, I'd probably invest in Kroger right about now. It seems like they are very undervalued because people see Amazon. They see this behemoth that's going to be really competitive in the grocery industry. Kroger has the assets, and they've been doing it for almost 100 years, if not more. I don't see it.
I tend to like my King Supers. That's the grocery store here.
That's just saying Supers is a Kroger brand.
Yes.
So you have a leg up right there. I like my King Supers, too. I don't go to Whole Foods. You know, and I do appreciate like natural organic food, but I go to Sprouts for that.
The only time we go to Whole Foods is to go get pink chicken. That's what my oldest daughter calls salmon, pink chicken.
You raised her right.
Yeah, and she loves it. I'm telling you, if you ask her what her favorite food is, Jalen would say pink chicken, which is salmon.
That's fantastic.
She loves it.
Good work, Jalen.
Good stuff. Well, if you're familiar with riding on the bus in one town, then you could probably figure out how to do it in another town, even though public transportation systems around the world are different. Well, the thing that most riders say throws them off is the different ways to buy and use tickets on a train or a bus. Like here, you buy a ticket for the light rail, but you never pass through a turnstile to get on, so it might confuse some folks. There are security people that are supposed to check for tickets or annual passes on our trains, but there's really no gates to pass through. Well, riders also have a tough time knowing how to read the route maps and get information about which route they should be on. Doesn't matter if it's here, there, or anywhere. But what if your credit card could act as that fifth element style multipass, enabling you to board that commuter train or the bus with just a wave of your hand? Now, that's the idea behind MasterCard. They have this new contactless payment system to try to get people around town efficiently or cross-country with ease. Now, more than 80 cities around the world are now allowing their commuters to pay for their train or bus pass by just tapping their card on an onboard terminal. And riders can also use their smartphones, which, I mean, it's really so much easier because rarely do you ever have the exact change, right?
Well, I don't think anybody carries cash anymore. And in Denver, it's $2.60 to get on the bus. So oftentimes you're left with either 40 cents sitting in your pocket or 240, or you just don't have the three ones. I don't know.
Or try to even find 60 cents.
There was one time I was in the middle, like way out on West Colfax, and all I had was a 10. And it was, do I go into the restaurant and break the 10 so I can get some change back? Or do I just put the 10 in the machine knowing that I'm not going to get all of my change back? Because the drivers don't care.
No,
I mean,
they're
just not at all interested in your rider concerns. There's about probably, I'm sorry, RTD, there's probably like 1 in 10 bus drivers that just does not care what you have in your hand. Just get on the bus. Like, I'm not even worried about payment or anything like that. You can flash any little white piece of paper at them, and you can get on. And it's really frustrating. And then the flip side of that is that you do have security guards on some of these buses, and you have some bus drivers that take it very serious, but they take it to the opposite extreme where they're getting into these 15-minute confrontations with people to try to throw them off the bus, and you're jamming up everybody else's schedule.
Exactly. And this is not an exclusive system for MasterCard customers. Well, Visa and American Express and others are getting on board here. And time will tell whether this system will make public transportation more appealing to some people. Just about everything else will eventually take smartphone payments, right? I'm surprised when I go to a store, actually, and they don't let you pay with your phone. I left my wallet at the house today, actually, and of course I have no cash on me. Well, I have 20 cents because I found it down in the studio on my desk. So I can't, and since my car's on fumes, I really can't go buy gas for 20 cents. Now, I have enough charge to get home, but it would be so much easier if I could just stop at a gas station that takes payment from my phone, but I don't think any of them exist. I mean, they don't even use the chip technology at the gas pumps right now.
It's true. Not at the pump. I mean, I think if you go inside, you might have better luck. But it's still very few of them that have transitioned over.
And I think it would stop those skimmer machines, those devices that they attach to the gas pumps. You know, I'm sure it does nothing. But I go over there and I shake it. I grab it and I shake it. At least I feel like I'm doing something.
I respect that. They always tell you, like, go in, if you really want to feel safe, go inside.
But then you have to go inside and then tell them how much you want and then pay for the gas, and that's a hassle.
It's true. Scammers. It's such a low-tech scheme. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a simple thing that you can do, and you can tell because of the rednecks that try to do it and don't get away with it.
How cool is this? California is about to see the country's first electric generating roads. It's thanks to these small little generators called piezoelectric devices. Now, when pressure vibrations are applied to these little piezos, they produce electricity. So when piezo devices are embedded in the pavement, every passing vehicle would generate current, and then that current would be used to charge just about everything when it dumps the power into the grid. Now, the technology has been successfully used already on roads in Israel, a subway platform in Tokyo, where they have it there, so when people walk by, it actually generates electricity. And they even have it on a floor in a nightclub in San Francisco, where the dancers, when they jump up and down, it keeps the lights that are embedded in the floor flashing. The more they jump, the more it flashes, because they're generating more power. So a pilot program to install these piezos in California freeways has already been approved, so how much energy do you think it could provide? They think a 5-mile section of highway with these little devices installed could generate enough power to run a small city for an entire year. That's remarkable. I mean, because this is, considering how many miles of roadway there are in California and how much traffic is constantly on those roads, I mean, this is energy that would otherwise be wasted. You know, the power generated would go right back into the grid, offset the other sources of power. Now, I don't know what they would charge you for that, or if they would have to separate what the power is coming from the traditional power supplies right now, like if it's coal generated or wind or solar or whatever, or if it's just everything's dumped into one pot and then you're paying Xcel, who, by the way, wants another rate increase, you know, that's the same kilowatt hour charge.
Right. I think it's, wouldn't it be interesting to see this in a lot of other places too, like in a track at a high school or something like that, where all those miles being run by the runners generate energy that goes back into the grid?
Or in a treadmill at, 24-hour fitness?
Imagine the partnership, 24-hour fitness powering the country.
Why not? You know, and if it can generate electricity at a similar or lower cost than what works now, then I'm all for it. I had solar panels on my last home. I put them up there as a hedge against Xcel Energy's tiered billing. What they do is they charge you more during the summer. You can get like a lower rate for up to like 650 kilowatts, and then it's more after that. It's basically, if you're running your air conditioner all the time, then you're going to pay more. Well, it was a hedge against that. because they keep asking for more and more tiered billing and more rate increases, like they're asking again, and they're going to do the same thing in December, same thing in the summer. And so when I sold the house, it was actually one of those attractive features that the buyer that bought it that wanted those solar panels on the house.
Right. I mean, the energy companies here, it's higher in the summer than during the winter as well, correct?
Well, no, the XL, yes. Okay. For XL, because they charged you a lower rate for the first $650 and then higher rate. It was like double for anything after that. Because I'm now on IREA, the Rural Electric Cooperative, mm-hmm. it's a cooperative. So all the people that are getting the power who are customers are actually part owners. That's how they do it. So actually, our power rate up. My electricity bill went down a ton getting off of XL.
Very interesting.
A ton. It is so much better. I still have to get my natural gas from XL, and they're still, you know,
XL
making me bend over. Our friends over at Instamotor, the app that lets you buy or sell used cars with your phone, asked more than 2,000 drivers of all ages a variety of questions about their driving habits and their feelings towards fellow drivers. So when they ask people how good of a driver they think they are, get this, 69% of guys self-identified as being a hazard on the road. Only 31% of women said they were a hazard on the road. Oh, I know there's some women that are definitely a hazard on the road.
I think men just like being called hazard. I think they all thought of it as a cool nickname.
Whether the men were trying to show off or just being honest, Instamotor says they find the split between men and women a surprising one. I don't. I think most men would agree they're more aggressive and potentially risky drivers, and they're more so than women. I put myself into that pool. I think the other 30% of the guys were in a ditch somewhere because they couldn't be a hazard on the road. Another question drivers were asked was, what irks them when they're at a four-way stop? 39% said that a neighboring vehicle not using a turn signal annoyed them the most. The second most annoying thing that a neighboring driver can do at a four-way stop is not come to a full stop. I see that all the time. The old California, the slow roll.
Right.
You know?
But through a four-way stop, that's irresponsible.
It's a common occurrence. It's like seeing dogs with sweaters. It happens all the time. That doesn't mean it's right by any means. It just happens. That or a cat on a leash. It shouldn't happen, but it does.
Am I allowed to walk my cat on a leash, Jason?
Like I said, it shouldn't happen, but it does. Instamotor also asked, what annoys drivers when they are cruising down the highway? More than 27% said that other drivers driving too slowly in the left lane. I saw this just yesterday. I would say that would be a higher number here in Colorado because drivers, they hear complain about it to me all the time about slow people in the left lane. The State Patrol will tell you that road rage is a major cause of crashes. This study found that although men are more likely to consider themselves a danger on the road, women experience road rage more often. That I found interesting. Of those who say they experience road rage more than four times a week, 34% were women between 18 and 34. Aggressive young women, apparently, driving on our roads right there.
That's it. Yeah, they're everywhere.
They also found out people who drive more than 10 hours a week on average are almost four times more likely to experience road rage. They say this might be a condition of more opportunities to be upset with neighboring drivers, considering they are on the road more often, or that driving longer hours leads to increased irritability. Seems pretty obvious to me, right?
Yep.
Unsurprisingly, the Instamotor study, though, found that millennials, you folks there, Joseph, use your phones the most while driving. Half of them admitted to heavy cell phone usage. People 55 years old and older say they only use their phones if they're completely pulled over. These statistics exist even though states have cracked down. Like in Colorado, they actually have increased the fine here to, what, $300?
Yep.
For texting and driving. And they even outlawed holding your phones in some states. California has that law pretty much that says you can't even touch your phone while you're driving. Something interesting but obvious, Instamotor says that the more hours we drive per week, the more likely we are to use our phones while we're driving. Well, that seems pretty obvious.
Right.
On the flip side, the drivers who say they won't touch their phone, just use it for navigation, are less likely to use it the more hours they spend on the road. This is why a young male, long-distance driver with short tempers should be forced to take the bus or train. Because statistically, they're going to be the most dangerous person on the road. Right?
You're looking at him. That's
there you have it. Well, you're not really looking at the podcast. Hopefully, you're still looking at the road while you're listening.
Please.
Coming up, what if you could see on your display, right there in your car, right in front of you, right by your speedometer, when the red light is going to turn green? That story and much, much more as the Driving You Crazy podcast continues.
I'm Jason Grenauer, and you're listening to the Driving You Crazy podcast with Jason Luber.
Man, how do I get ready? Well, first of all, it starts the day before because we get up so early. But, I have all my clothes done. They're, ready to go for the whole week. I kind of do that on Sunday nights like Superman. I just jump in it and go. Never hit snooze. That's the first thing. You can never hit snooze because if you hit snooze, you're done. Like, that's it. You're missing the show. You're going to be late. You cannot hit snooze. Always have to make your bed. Well, my wife is in the bed, but I try to straighten up as much as I can because Navy SEALs say, first thing you should do every single day is make your bed, because then you've kind of like taken control of the day because you've done something. Have my first sips of coffee, the elixir of the gods, and then jump in the car and head to work. It doesn't take me an hour to get ready, but I like having an hour to kind of get up and, get used to the day.
Adam Hammond, only on Denver 7.
Oh, my favorite part about the morning show is not knowing what's going to happen. Literally, you can tune in and you never know what's going to happen that day. Each and every day, something very interesting or comical happens.
Dale Cedars, only on Denver 7.
Welcome back to the Driving You Crazy podcast with me, Denver 7 traffic anchor Jason Luber, and newscast producer Joseph Peters, wearing a awesome new hat and a elephant shirt.
Also, it's pedestrian advocate, Joseph.
Oh,
Peters.
I'm sorry. Thank pedestrian. You. That's going to be a long business card.
It is.
Producer, pedestrian advocate, red shoe wearer. Elephant lover, apparently.
Elephant lover and red shoe wearer.
The old saying is, it's not hard to catch a dumb criminal. Police in Alabama say a thief who couldn't figure out how to shift the truck he stole out of first gear led them on a slow speed chase. The 16-mile chase never topped 30 miles an hour. It ended when the transmission seized up, stopping the truck. Deputies say the chase began when they saw a man who had just stolen a truck, and one of the officers joked, "Thank God he couldn't find second gear. The pursuit could have gotten all the way up to 35. This 29-year-old brain surgeon faces multiple charges, including attempting to elude and resisting arrest. Very few people, I think, anymore know how to drive a stick, right? I like it. I mean, this might be one of the best car theft deterrents available.
Having a stick shift.
Yeah, buying a manual transmission. I mean, you could put a sign on the window, unless you can drive a stick, you better steal a different car. And if you can drive a stick, well, my car is still not worth stealing.
that's all very legit.
Go find an Escalade to go steal. I know one's in our parking lot right now.
We're not telling you to steal it. We're just telling you it's there.
Yes, it is there. Joseph, I pride myself in knowing when a traffic light is going to turn green.
I pride myself on knowing when the red hand is going to turn into the white walking man.
Yes. So, yeah. See, some of the lights I come to, I remember what the timing is. And on others, I just look over like you do at the walk, don't walk sign and to get a clue of when it's going to change. But what if you could know exactly when that signal is going to change down to the second, whether you have 2 minutes or 10 seconds before the light turns green? Well, Frisco, Texas is going to be the second city in the country to connect its traffic signal network to certain vehicles. Now, Las Vegas, they linked its network of intersections with this traffic signal technology back in December. Audi is the only car company offering this traffic signal information so far. The best part is that you have to have the Audi Prime subscription, and that runs you just $33 a month. I guess if you can afford a new Audi, I guess you could afford subscription to their little connection service at $400 a year. So other car makers are, though, expected to integrate this technology into their own vehicles, and as the service expands to more cities, and I'm sure the cost that you are going to have to pay, that you'll be privileged to get this privileged information, will be about the same, probably $20 to $40 a month, depending on the car, the features that you get with that connected service. Now, what happens is the city sends out their traffic signal information to a company called Traffic Technology Services, which then makes it available in real time on a secure network to their partners. That's where some of that monthly fee is going. The industry then relays that data to individual vehicles, and right now the data just goes one way, from the city's traffic signal network to the vehicles. The hope is that the vehicles will eventually share that information in real time with the city, so it doesn't cost the cities anything to have this technology added into their system, so they're eager to join in, because now people will know when the traffic lights are going to turn green. I saw the video Audi put out that shows this time to green feature, as they call it, and it is right there in the middle of the display, right next to the speedometer, right where you see the countdown timer, and there's an image of a red stoplight. It looks pretty neat. I guess I did like the convenience of knowing when the light was going to change there, just as an informational banner, or I guess display there right next to the speedometer. That's part of the appeal, they say, giving some basic information to the driver that provides that extra level of comfort.
Well, and the extra level of speed, too, right? I mean, that's really what this is all about, is if you know when the green light's going to change, you can get off to a quicker start, and that can shave, what, like 10 seconds off a short commute?
Well, or if let's say you can time the lights as you know the light is going to turn green here and you're coming up to it in 5 seconds, maybe you'll slow down a little bit so you keep on going instead of stopping and then driving again.
Right.
So Audi is testing other advancements to the technology. Alternate routes could then, let's say, be calculated based on real-time traffic data, or vehicle speeds could be suggested to maximize the number of green lights you would hit so you wouldn't have to wait at any red lights. Drivers would also get feedback on how to drive to maximize their fuel economy. Thanks.
I don't need that.
Audi hopes to expand the system to other U.S. Cities, including like Los Angeles. The problem is that they have a patchwork of traffic management systems there in L.A., run by a whole bunch of different cities. And this is really just another one of those infrastructure steps that they need before we can see self-driving cars everywhere. So, you know, it's part of that technology. And I think we're going to hear these stories like this, these little pieces of stories that will then all come together as part of the whole infrastructure for self-driving cars.
Right, because it doesn't happen overnight. You just hear and hear and hear, and you kind of become accustomed to hearing the chatter. And then one day you're riding in a self-driving car and you wonder, you know, how did we get here?
Yep. Well, this is how we're doing it.
I'm surprised. It doesn't surprise me that Las Vegas is a test city. What does my memory of Las Vegas is it was a city with a higher than usual rate of pedestrian crashes, or crashes involving pedestrians.
Well, yeah, because there's so many people on the strip that are trying to cross. And if you've ever tried to drive there and like get in one of the casinos, especially the cabs, while all the people are crossing because they're walking down the strip,
it's a nightmare, especially on the strip. I mean, you're not getting anywhere most days. So that to me is really interesting. I don't know how I would feel knowing that my neighbor on the road had that information and I didn't. That feels a little unfair, right?
Well, it only costs you $400 a year, Joseph.
And an Audi.
There you go. Pony up. So last week, my wife and I attended a funeral for the wife of a good friend of ours. My wife and I went to the main service, and then there was this procession over to the gravesite. And then we went back to the reception at his home. And I've been fortunate in my life not to have been to many funerals. Only a couple of times I've been in a funeral procession that I can recall. The parking lot was set up in these long rows that could hold about 10 cars or so. And then there were these 10 or 12 of these rows where drivers just park behind each other. So they'll be in position for the later procession to the gravesite, even if you weren't going in the procession, they still had you park that way. The funeral director spoke just after the service to say there was not going to be an escorted procession to the cemetery and that anyone going there would have to obey all the traffic laws. And that created a few conversations about the procession process. And all the people there were asking me some of the questions and how it works because they know that I'm the traffic guy. So I told them what I knew at the service, but I wanted to know more. So I started looking into this. And out of the blue, it just so happened I was leaving the dentist yesterday and I'm at a traffic light there. And this guy in this motorcycle with the police lights, he pulls right in front of me. I posted the video on my Facebook page so you could see it. It's a Jason Luber traffic guy on Facebook, so you could see it there. So he holds traffic. He pulls right in front of me, holds traffic to allow the funeral procession. So here comes the hearse and the Cadillac carrying the family to pass through. And then this white car with red and blue lights, he pulls up and then moves past us to the next intersection and then cuts off the intersection to allow the motorcade to continue on. And then off goes the motorcycle. So I followed him. And I was fortunately making a left turn at that next interchange, so I was able to get out of the way and I could see everybody else that was passing. Mm-hmm. So, but there's a lot of people that have never been in a funeral procession. The guy next to me, he was waiting because he saw that that guy in the motorcycle just stop with his lights on. And so he stopped. Naturally, we thought maybe it was a policeman or something. And so then this guy is like yelling at this driver right next to me to, hey, move out of the way. Well, he didn't know what's going on.
Right.
So if you don't know what to do when you come across a funeral procession or if you're in one, then and you want to know how to handle all this stuff, well, here are some proper etiquette techniques, I guess, or the proper etiquette of a funeral procession. All right, so here's a few things that you need to know. One, you're going to be driving slower than average if you're in the procession, and most likely lower than the speed limit. You should stay as close as you can to the car in front of you while you're in that procession. Basically, don't allow room for another vehicle not in the procession to cut in. You should stay in line and in with the procession at all times, even if it means you're going to go through a red light at an intersection, because most likely if it's escorted, then it will be blocked off.
Right.
Local traffic ordinances give funeral processions the right of way, and other motorists, like me when I came across it, must yield to that procession until it's all the way past. Don't leave your place in the procession line unless there's an emergency, and the last car in the procession should have these two funeral flags. It's also going to have hazard lights flashing to signify to the other drivers that the procession has ended and that the traffic may resume normally. So for some long processions, a funeral attendant might place a couple of magnetic flags, usually bright orange, that reads funeral on your car. The flag is supposed to be placed on the hood of a vehicle in the front left corner of the driver's side. If there are a bunch of cars in the procession, they might put one on every, let's say, third vehicle.
Right.
Something like that. You're also going to be instructed to turn your headlights on for the drive to the cemetery that allows everybody to know that you're in that procession. And both the funeral flags and the headlights signify to other motorists that you're part of it. And once you arrive at the cemetery, the attendant there will most likely grab the flags from your vehicle as you get there. Now, what do you do if you see a funeral procession like I did? The main thing to remember is that a funeral procession, it will have the right of way, and they can, and they did in my instance, to go right through the traffic signals, right through the red lights. And you don't need to pull over, because I didn't really even have a chance to pull over. Just be mindful that the procession has the right of way, and here are some additional do's and don'ts of how to handle that procession that passes through the area while you're driving. First, you should be respectful. These people are mourning a family member or a loved one who died. You yield to the procession. I was reading a story of a driver for Jimmy John's Subs who actually twice cut through a funeral procession in northern Michigan. The 22-year-old lost his job for doing that. Once the lead car has entered traffic, such as going through an intersection, the entire procession will follow without interruption, even if their traffic light is red and yours is green. You must stop and allow that procession to continue through the intersection until all the cars in the procession have passed. Now, watch for the last vehicle in the procession. Once it passes by, resume the normal flow of traffic. Don't cut into or cut out of procession like that kid did. Don't honk at a car in a funeral procession. Remember, these people are there because they have a loved one that died. Don't pass a funeral procession on the right side on a highway unless the procession is in the far left lane. I didn't see any state laws governing funeral processions in Colorado. However, Denver Revised Municipal Code does have as part in it that vehicles and escorts in a funeral procession do have the right of way and may proceed regardless of traffic signals. And Colorado State Patrol basically follows these rules as well. So if you ever come across it on a highway or a interstate or whatever, it's basically the same rules. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, a day or two after I started researching the story, I got an email from a place called declutter.com that asked 1,000 people about their smartphone addiction. So this is the question that I found interesting and relates to this funeral story. In what situations do you look at your phone? The number one for men, at just over 80%, was a funeral. Women looked at their phone, they say, just under 20% at a funeral.
I'm so glad that this survey existed and that we're bringing it back. Nobody talked about this particular statistic within the survey, but men always use their phones at funerals and women never do. And this proves it. 4-to-1 margin, men are more likely to use their phones at funerals.
I would never do it. When I was at the funeral, I didn't do it.
I just had the same thing. I didn't do it either. I'm wondering, I don't know. Maybe we're just
because I feel it's like completely disrespectful if the person, especially some of the family members, or like in this case, it was this guy, his wife had died, and I couldn't imagine him looking over to me while he's doing his eulogy, and I'm just scrolling through my newsfeed.
That's just it. I mean, I can't imagine any funeral where I wouldn't be completely engaged, if that makes sense.
Right, you know? Exactly. It's a couple of hours out of your day, really. And I was telling my wife this this at the funeral. It was a pretty long day for me. I was tired, but it was nothing compared to what this guy was going through and will for the coming weeks and months. So whatever discomfort I had paled in comparation to the problems that he has and will have for the coming months.
It makes you a lot more grateful, right?
Yeah, exactly. So back to that declutter survey, the other top answer for what situations do most often you look at your phone, guy said at a wedding, right at 80%. Women were at 20%.
I'm calling bull on this one.
Really?
Women, they take pictures. That's looking at a smartphone.
Well, I don't know. Taking pictures might be different than looking at your phone.
Okay, but then when you take the picture, you have to post it to Facebook, and then at that point, you are definitely looking at your phone.
Well, the top place that women said they like to check their phone was while watching TV at home. Second was with their partner, and tied for third was waking up and just before going to sleep. At a concert, at the movies, and in the bathroom, also high on the list for women. I didn't think that women would like to check their phone in the bathroom. Men do all the time.
Everybody does.
Because the high spots for men were with family or friends, in the bathroom, and on a date.
Remember when we used to read books and magazines and stuff?
No, I don't.
It's been a while.
It's all on my phone. Then declutter asked, what would you rather be without than your cell? The first thing men would give up before their phones was new clothes, followed by their car, coffee, sleep, and their favorite food. Women would rather have their phone than enjoy a vacation, sports, partying, or sex. Most women said they would miss being able to take pictures or video, like you said, at a wedding, without their phones, while men would miss not being able to stream movies or shows.
This survey literally plays into every stereotype that's out there.
Yes, it does. I mean, really, there it is. That is the difference between men and women all rolled up and how they like to use their smartphones.
No, I mean, I'm saying it plays into the stereotype so well that I feel like they just looked at like, oh, men do this, women do this, and they just made up some numbers and threw them on a chart. I'm sorry, declutter. I'm calling out your survey. I don't buy it. I need crosstabs. Like, I need to see the white paper. Sorry, I'm done. There's no way. There's no way that women check their phone four times as often at a funeral than women, or at a funeral. There's just no way with the wedding one. There's no way that bathroom is at number one for both genders, and there's no way men would miss the ability to stream movies or shows most.
They asked 1,000 people. Maybe they should have asked 10,000 people.
Give me a break. Garbage.
One place I'm very cognizant of trying not to use my phone is anytime I'm with my kids. Because, look, they see way more than parents give them credit for. And I fear if they watch me checking my phone all the time, when they do eventually get one, I know they'll want to do the exact same thing.
It's true. And it's a tough environment to raise a newborn because there are a lot of tools out there that can be very beneficial with an iPad or with a tablet of any sort. But you have to balance that with the knowledge that they can't just do this. They have to do other things. They have to do a lot of other things and, in fact, spend minimal time with the tablet.
Because my girls, in second grade, Jaylin had her own Chromebook and iPad in class. Now, she couldn't take it home, but she was assigned one in class, her own one.
I'm being 100% honest with you. I think there are probably maybe a quarter of classrooms nationwide – maybe, and that feels high, that don't have some sort of tablet aspect in the classrooms right now.
Well, because that's the way they're going to be going. And actually, I think in sixth grade, I have to get her her own Chromebook because that's how all their assignments are. So no longer are you going to have a backpack full of your books. You're going to have your Chromebook full of all your stuff. And that's how everything is done via email and Google Docs and all that stuff.
At the end of the day, I'm calling it a good thing. For the most part, that they have all this technology and that they're being able to utilize it at such a young age. Like, I don't see why that's not a net positive. I just worry about what happens with the parents that aren't cognizant of what too much can do to a child and don't encourage their kids to go out and know what fresh air feels like.
Because honestly, these phones, they are devastatingly intoxicating.
Yes.
And it is so hard to get these phones out of their hands once you give it to them and let them do it. And that's one of the reasons they like to use them while they're driving. I mean, they're just intoxicated.
I mean, just in general, though. In the survey, it said, with your partner. Yeah, I mean, my home life is a lot of sitting on the couch and looking at the smartphone and making plans, you know, and like, spending time together in other ways, too. But realistically, I think any millennial couple will tell you there's a lot of time spent just sitting on the couch and looking at the phone. And it's fine. You know, I don't see any real problem with it. It's just what our generation does.
Don't know what the next generation is going to be into, but
they'll be just looking at stuff. They'll have virtual reality glasses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what it'll be. Perfect. Maybe they can have virtual reality driving, and maybe that's what they should do, is just have the Hyperloop, and then it looks like you're driving. And
I'm excited for this bullet train that's going to get us to Boulder in 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, but okay. All right. Yeah, because it's going to take you 20 minutes to get to the train, get in the train, and then for it to take off. And then it gets to Boulder in 5 minutes, and it's going to take another 15 minutes to get off the train. So it's going to be a lot faster just to get in your own car and drive up there yourself.
That first mile, last mile problem, man. We'll talk about it next time.
All right. Well, speaking of that, we will be back next time with another fine edition of the Driving You Crazy podcast. Until then, thanks again for listening. I am the traffic guy, Jason Luber.
I am pedestrian advocate, Joseph Peters.
Be safe, and as always, happy motoring.